You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.
Aloha. Hello. 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 I'm still in Hawaii, but saying hi. We have a new segment, new information today. We're going to talk about credit and buying property and buying a car and the best ways to do that. And we're listening to Tech Trend Investments with
Joseph Grassa. Elizabeth Powell.
Drum roll, drum roll.
I love that intro. I've always loved that intro. But it all starts with the beginning though, right? It all starts at the intro. And just like credit, it all starts with what you do right away.
Right, right. So we're going to help people out as a real estate and mortgage broker. So I've had a background on helping people fix their credit. And then also on purchasing cars, buying houses, the best way to go about it, how to get your free credit report, how to get information and keep updated on what's going on. And then what lenders look at. So like lenders look at when you're buying a car or you're buying a house or you're renting something, what they're going to look at. So we're going to go over that information today. But saying hi first, it's been kind of an exciting roller coaster up and down fun week. It's funny how psychologically everything will play out in the market. So you can get the temperament of what's going on in the world by looking at charts and see the market, what's going on. But it's been a good week. It's been a good week.
It's been a good week at the end of the day. If you got into crypto when we said you did, when you said you should, then you'd understand why. And timing of the market is everything.
And you'd still be up too. So
you definitely would be.
Yeah, you're still up like 200% if you got in when we first started talking about crypto. So there's long-term plays and there's short-term plays, but we always will have a pullback. And so there was an opportunity to get in even cheaper over on Saturday with lots of exciting things going on in the world. But every single time that there's an event or a major event that could possibly affect the world or the US or anywhere where you're located, it's always going to have an effect on the markets because people don't know what's going on and there's the unknown. And so they go to safety whenever they think there's an unknown factor and they don't know what's going to happen and they don't know what's going to happen on the market. People will tend to change their assets and move their assets around, but that can also hurt you. So like if you sold off and you sold off when it hit, it's what, 2,900 on ETH, hypothetically.
Was it 29?
It went to 29 on Saturday. Yeah.
Ouch.
But then it bounced back to 3,250. So some people will like sell off at the 29 and then they'll enter back at the 3,250. So you lost that 10% gap if you got a little emotional and got in and out of your crypto. But, I mean, we also teach, and what we've been teaching is how to de-risk your portfolio and so that you're always in the profit and then you don't have as much as a financial risk, whatever you're trading or whatever you're doing. But we're having a bounce back. So that's our recap of the weekend. But we have some exciting things to talk about for the general public on working on your credit, how to fix your credit, what your credit scores mean, what lenders look for, how to buy a car, how to buy a house, and we're probably not going to cover it all in this segment, so we'll continue it on to next segment too. But it can help you pretty much anywhere in the world, like if you're applying for an SBA loan or you need a business loan or personal line of credit or a credit card, lenders are going to look at your credit. And so learning how to establish your credit and do it the right way will help you out.
100%. 100%. And it all starts at the beginning. Like I said before, it all starts at the beginning, right when you get your first credit card. Or you're able to get your first credit card, which is definitely the right way to start. As soon as you're able to get a credit card, use it. And it's for small purchases, big purchases, it doesn't matter. You'll learn, and I learned right away, that the faster you use it and the more often you use it and pay it off right away. My trick was I'd go out and I'd buy something. I'd come home. Right when I got home, I paid it off. That's what I would do every day. When I'd go out and buy something, let's say I go out and get a drink or boba or whatever I want, food. I'd go out, I'd get it, I'd come home, I'd pay it. that's the habit I got into. And as over the years, your credit score will skyrocket significantly. And the way they look at it is how fast you're paying it, if you're paying it on time, and if you're using it. Because if you're not using it, then you're not really gaining and you're not really losing.
Yeah, credit companies and banks tend to give you credit when you don't need credit. So the key is, so if you're starting out and you're getting out of high school and you're going into college, there's also opportunities to get into college credit cards. So they'll give you a credit card just on the basis that you're going to college and they anticipate that you're going to have income in the future. Because most people that don't have any established credit at all, like they don't have a car loan, they don't have a credit card, they don't have a department store, they have nothing. It's hard to get credit because they're new and they're just coming into the workforce and just starting to get income. And you become legally binding at 18, where before that you would have to have a parent or a co-parent on your loan or credit card, and it would go under their credit primarily and you as a secondary. So students, if they're 18 or over, can get a credit card by when they're going to school. So like Discover offers it, Credit One offers it. You can just go into a Nerd Wallet or you can Google credit cards for college students. And they'll start you off with a low limit, usually like $300 or $500. And the thing again, too, is always make sure that when you're utilizing credit, you're not spending more than you can afford. So that's the thing that everyone gets into. So like if you go to the grocery store normally, or you get gas and you normally pay cash for it, you can use the credit card instead. And like Joseph said, then pay off the balance, accumulate the money that you would have spent on cash, and then put it into the credit card instead. I hope I have a good connection. I have a...
You definitely do. You sound flawless today.
Okay, awesome. I hear static. I'm like, oh no, my internet dropped. But the joys of traveling, you never know if your internet's going to be good or whatever it wants to do.
Tip on traveling, look for good internet.
right. Yeah. Like when I Google, I'm like, okay, does it have internet? Is it business friendly? Otherwise, I'd be like down by the beach having this and you can hear all the waves crashing while I'm talking on my laptop and everybody's staring at me. I'm telling people how to fix their credit. But so you can start out with that. And then if you're already established, the thing that they look for is the balance on your credit. So the balance on your credit cards, how much you owe. Yes, if you're timely or not, you never want to go more than 30 days late. If the credit card is due on the 30th, you have to make the payment on or before the 30th. I know this is all basic info, but we're trying to catch a broad audience. But this will apply when you're buying a house or buying a car or getting a loan or getting other lines of credit or anything else that you want to finance. Like they look at your credit. So the keys are is we can talk about how to fix a credit, but what they look for first. So what they look for first is they look for low balances with high limits. And then they look to make sure that you've always paid on time. So all of your credit, you've paid on time on your auto, on your credit cards, on any of your department stores, any loans, any lines, student loans, making sure that those are on time. Student loans usually have like a 90-day grace period before they report to the bureau. So if you can make your payments or go into deferment or forbearance before that 90-day period comes up, you're usually safe and under the gun. EIDL loans, so COVID loans that we're out to, make sure that you're on time on those. SBA loans, make sure you're on time on those. Look into the guidelines and then find out. You can call customer service and always ask for help or ask what their perimeters are, what their guidelines are, if they have any hardship assistance, if you're falling behind, so it doesn't affect your credit. But when a bank looks at it, the bank will look at how much total you have available. So if you have one credit card for $1,000 and another credit card for $3,000, another credit card for $6,000, if you add that up, you have a 6, 3, and a 1, you have $10,000 of total credit. And if one credit card has $800 and then the other one has $700 and then the other one has $2,500, now you owe $4,000 of that $10,000. So your debt to available credit ends up coming in at 40%. So you're utilizing 40% is owed over $10,000 available. And then this is the key when you're trying to get a loan or trying to get a car or anything else. What affects your credit score is they take how much available you have. So most people think, oh, I have an empty credit card. I'm not using it. I should close it out. Well, closing out your credit card that you're not using but has a zero balance and has a good history and actually benefits you. If you close it out, it hurts you. Because say you had that $10,000 of credit and you closed out the, I can't remember what my numbers were. Say you close out the $4,000 one. So the $4,000 one gets closed. Now you only have $6,000 of available credit, but you owe $4,000. So you take four divided by six, you only have two, you're utilizing two thirds of it, where before you're utilizing two fifths of it. So you had more credit available, which makes your score go higher. So the more credit, I know I sound complicated, but but the goal is to have as much credit as possible with low balances and payments on time. And then they also look for the length and the history of how long your credit has been open. So if you got a credit card at 18, out of going to college, and then you held onto that credit card and you kept it going for a couple of years, now you have the two-year history. Because banks, cars, everything also looks for a two-year history of credit. So anything that you had established 2 years or more actually works in your favor too.
100%. I think another thing that plays a part into it is like your past history. Like if you've inquired about credit before, that usually if you apply for a credit card down the line, this is more for experienced people that have already had one. If you apply for one, your credit score is not good enough and you get declined, your credit score will go down. If you have any lawsuit records, like any existing accounts with other, if you go to get another one, you have any existing accounts where you have a pending balance, that'll impact your credit score. Your overall income affects how much credit you can receive. So basically they'll look at how much you make and they'll be like, okay, based on you make $100,000 a year, so we're going to give you $200,000. So they always want to give you more because they want you to spend more so you go in debt so that then they start making more and more money on these interest payments. But vice on the offhand, it'll affect your credit score negatively, which you want to watch out for. And you never want to spend more than you have. Like Elizabeth said, never, never, never spend more than you actually have and that you can actually afford.
Right.
So you don't end up going bankrupt, which is another thing that'll affect your credit score.
Right. So you can also get a free credit report. I know we're talking about credit and most people just want to close their eyes and they don't want to know and they're just hoping for the best. Sometimes things will show up in your credit report that don't belong there. So like you may get a collection of a utility bill from 3 years ago when you had paid it off, but it didn't register correctly. And so it shows up on your credit report as a collection and you wouldn't know about it unless you get a credit report. And most of the bureaus will give you a free credit report now once a year. And you're also entitled to a free credit report if you apply for credit and you're denied, or if you just apply for any credit, you're entitled to a free credit report because they need to provide it to you to show you it, based on their decision if they granted it to you or if they denied you. But once a year, you can get a free credit report. So you can go on to Experian or TransUnion or Equifax and then go in and say, I want my free credit report. And then they'll give you the free credit report. Sometimes they'll give you a FICO score too. And so the FICO score is the rating score that the banks look at to see if you qualify for buying a house or buying a car or getting another credit. And then as Joseph said too, when you're inquiring and you're applying for credit, inquiries, which means that the bank or the car dealership or whoever's pulling your credit, they're getting an inquiry. And so they want to see what your credit looks like. It's called a hard pull. So a hard pull means it is going in towards an actual loan or something that you're going to get information for to buy or purchase to get credit. So a hard pull affects your credit score, but you can get a soft pull. A soft pull means it won't show up on your credit report. It won't hurt it. And you can catch a soft pull. A soft pull means that you pull it yourself or you go to Experian or you go to TransUnion or Equifax and get your free credit report. And it won't count against you because it's a soft pull. It's not that you're obtaining credit. You're just inquiring to find out what your credit looks like. And then I'll also explain how you can help your score go up and how you can fix it too, because you need that when you're going to go buy a car or get another credit card or get another house. So if you're in the process of buying a house, you want to make sure you're not trying to get new credit before you buy the house, because it'll count as your debts and it also count as inquiries and count against your credit and make your credit score go down. Whenever you're going to do a big, giant, major purchase, do the major purchase first. Don't do the small things before. Do the small things after your major purchase. If it's a house or buying a car or doing a major credit card or something, never do the little credit card stuff or the little inquiries or things that are going to affect your credit. Always focus on the major purchase first, close the major purchase, and then you can try and obtain credit after that.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the one mistake that I made that I'll never make again, though, is that I got a hard pull on one of my cars that I bought.
Oh.
And it affected my credit score. And then I go home and I'm like, wait a minute, why'd it go down?
Yeah, or they'll pull like six of them because they're trying to get the best rate for the bank, but they don't inform you that they're pulling six credit pulls and they're all from different banks and it counts against you for each one that goes through.
Yeah, exactly. And then when one of them goes through, though, it brings it back up slowly, but it still affects you in a negative manner.
Well, they also have a new law and you have to verify. Of course, this is not financial advice. This is for educational purposes only. Contact your CPA, contact your broker, contact whoever you're dealing with, your bank. Make sure and verify all the information because it can vary from city to city, state to state, county to county,
country to country.
Right. I was throwing that one in last, country to country. So Canada may have different laws than consumer protection laws in California. Consumer protection laws in California are pretty strict. But if you do like all car pulls, make sure they're all in the same month, because if they're in the same month, it usually only counts that one time in that month. If you pull, like, say you're going in April and it comes to the end of April and you go and apply for a car end of April and now you apply for a car beginning of May, it'll count as like two different pulls versus if it stays in the same month. They kind of group those together and it won't affect you as much as if they're two separate months, because it looks like you're trying to obtain two different sources of credit. One second.
Yep. So I think out of that, the key takeaway is if you can ask, get a soft. And then also make sure to only, if they're going to inform you or tell them, you should tell them in advance to only look at one rather than six or seven or five or whatever it is. Tell them to look at one, because one will save you so much credit score, as I've realized through experience, and it's highly recommended. But I think at the end of the day, if you're able to make those payments on the car or the house or whatever you're using your credit for on time, your credit score will go up significantly, because the bank will see you, or your credit lender will see you as someone who pays back and pays back on time. And they like that. They like when they get their money back that they're lending out to you, and they'll give you higher credit limits. Your credit score will go up. They'll offer, you'll get mail about new cards that they've come out with. You'll get promotions. You'll get like, there's cards out there where you'll get an offer for airline rewards. You'll get hotel rewards. You'll get cash back, a bunch of other cards. They'll just throw your way and offer you, here, try our new card. Try this card, try that card. And they'll throw money at you.
Right. In the anticipation that you'll use all their cards.
Here, go into debt with us.
Yeah. Again, like, if you don't need credit is when everybody wants to give you credit. That's what always happens, right? But there's a key. So you can pull your own credit report. If you're searching for a car or you're searching for a house, you can get one inquiry, which would be your own. So you can pull up your own and you can find out what your FICO score is. And then you can go shop around and tell them, so my FICO score is 800 and I'm interested in this car. Or I'm interested in this house. What kind of rates, what kind of terms can you give me based off of my FICO score being this? Like, I do not want you to pull a credit report until we come to a negotiation and come to terms. And if you can give me the best price and you can give me the best rate and terms, then I'll go ahead and pull a credit report with you. Because if you're going from location to location or broker to broker or dealership to dealership, and you keep pulling credit reports hoping that each person is going to give you the best price, you're going to have all these inquiries and your FICO score will keep going down and your credit will get hurt. But you can take a soft pull. So you can take your own credit report and then go to the brokers and say, based off of this information, this is my FICO score at 800. This is my income. These are my debts. What can you offer me? And then if you like the terms that they're offering you and you compared your terms with everybody else and you pick that broker, you tell them, okay, put it in writing that you'll offer me this deal based off of these terms if my FICO score comes in at this, around this range. So if it comes in around 780 or 800. And so then you're only going to pull one credit report with that specific dealer or that specific broker because you've negotiated terms first. And then after you negotiate terms, then you pull your credit. So it's not affecting it. But I'm going to tell you a key on how to make your credit look sparkly while you're shopping around. So when you pull your soft pull, it looks good. There's secrets in the industry. So if you pull your credit report and you find out that, you know, like there's something on it that you don't believe in, you don't think is true, you're allowed to dispute it. So you can do a dispute online with it. So say, like I gave an example, you had a utility bill from 3 years ago that popped up on your credit report and went to collections, but you paid it off. So if you have proof that you paid it off, you can dispute it, submit the proof, and the company that put the negative item on your credit report has 30 days to respond. If they don't respond within that 30 days, it automatically has to be deleted. If they do respond and they come back and say, no, it's verified, they have to show proof of why it's verified and true. And then you can counter it and then show documentation that you paid it off and it's true that it was paid off and it needs to be deleted from your credit report. But that's the little cue, that's the little hint, is you're allowed to dispute pretty much anything on your credit report. They have to respond within 30 days. And if they don't respond within 30 days, they automatically have to delete it. And you need to go to each of the bureaus and look at each of the bureaus, like Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, or whatever bureaus you have, and look at all the items and anything that's negative or derogatory, dispute it. Especially if you're in the process of purchasing a home or you're looking for a car, while the information is in dispute, that item becomes neutral. So don't quote me, verify it, but we've had instances in historicals with clients. While it's in dispute, that item becomes neutral and it'll actually pop your score up. So while it's in dispute for those 30 days until they come back with it, they don't count it as a negative. They don't count it as a positive. They count it as a neutral until the dispute comes back and then they verify. So if you have any derogatory information on your credit report to help your FICO score go up while you're in the process of purchasing something and you want to make sure that it looks good, dispute any items that are derogatory. Confirm that with other people, but this is what we've had experience with before in the past. And then on your accounts, you may have like 3 or 4 different accounts and they're all holding different amounts. If you transfer them over to a zero balance, like a zero interest for 6 months, you'll save interest on all of them. And then all the other ones will zero out. So you'll have that $2,000 credit card with a zero balance now and that $4,000 credit card with a zero balance and that $6,000 credit card with a zero balance. And then you can move it over to another credit card and then have a 6 months of 0% interest. So you're not incurring interest on that 29% or whatever the crazy amount is. It's on one credit card. And your minimum monthly payment is based off of each credit card. So your $2,000 might have a minimum monthly of $200 and your $3,000 might have a minimum monthly of $300. But if you move them all onto one credit card with a zero balance, your minimum monthly might only be $150. And so when you're looking at your debts on how much you owe and your debt ratio to your income, they'll take into consideration how much is available in your credit, what your FICO score is, what your debt ratios are, and your debt ratio will be $150 on that credit card and like $1,000 for your car payment. So you'll have $1,150 of debt versus if you had all your open credit cards with different minimum balances in them, each one would have a higher amount that you owe monthly. So you'll have like a $200, a $300, a $400. So you have about $900 that you have a minimum monthly due on your credit card versus if it was on one and your minimum was only like $150. That reduces your debt ratio, and then it makes you qualify for a bigger house or a bigger amount on a car amount or credit, whatever you're looking for. So those are the little tips and secrets on how to make your credit look sparkle.
Look sparkly and shiny. Sparkly. Right? Their eyes glisten when they look at it. Wow, look at this credit score.
Right. And then you're able to drop down your minimum monthly payment too, lower your interest rate, increase your credit lines, and then qualify for more because they go off of the amount that you owe divided by your amount of income.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I pulled up some numbers that I have from my, something that I use to like determine my credit score and figure out like what I need to put my focus on. Cause not many people know what they need to focus on. I know we've touched on it. Pay your stuff on time, make sure you pay it out quickly, use it often. But the weightings itself is what I looked for in specific, and the payment history, like whether you paid your past bills on time, how quick you paid them, is a 35% weighting on your credit score. The amount owed you have on your credit score, so the amount of total how much debt you have, is a weighting of 30% on your credit score.
That's 65 right there.
That's 65% just on if you owe money and if you paid your stuff on time. That's 65%. That's a lot. That's a big weighting to have. And then you have 15% on the length of your credit history. So how long you've had your account open.
And most of them look for at least 2 years. So make sure you have 2 years. Yes.
At least 2 years. And then you have your credit mix, which is 10%, which is the type of credit you've had, whether that be mortgage, auto loans, credit cards. So they'll weigh it differently based on if you've had a house versus if you've had to put it on a credit card or a car itself. So different weightings based on that, and that's worth 10%. And then new credit. So the frequency of credit inquiries in your account with new openings. So if you open up a new credit, that's worth 10%. So the more of them you open, that's worse for your credit score, and that's weighted 10%. That's fairly heavy for that. And the best way is to mix and to make sure you're on top of all of these. So only get a new credit card for every 4 to 6 months. Pay your credit card on time. Put your house, your car, and your credit cards all on separate cards so that you can, manage all of them differently and they don't affect each other directly. Open your card for 2 years. Have it open for 2 years. So when you start at 18, make sure you're using it for 2 years. Two years straight, so that when you're 20 and you're looking for a car, you can get one with a really good credit. And then the amount owed, always make sure you pay on time. That's like a heavy stressor. Paying your bills on time and making sure that you have nothing owed is always like priority number one. And even to the creditors themselves, it is priority number one. Pay your bills on time and make sure you don't have a debt.
And if you don't pay them on time, credit cards are pretty hefty lately, and so are auto loans. Like if you're late, even one day, they can charge you a $39 fee for being late one day. It doesn't affect your credit if you owe it, say, on the 30th and you pay it on the 1st. You're not 30 days late per se on the credit report, but you're a day late or 2 days late from the credit card company. And so they usually imply fees onto you if you're late. It doesn't go onto your credit report until you're 30 days past the due date. So say it's due on the 30th and then you don't make the payment until around the 28th. You're coming up on 28, 30 days at that point, depending on when the end of the month was. But on the credit card, they're allowed to charge you late fees because they disclose it in their terms and agreement on the auto loans and also on credit cards. Credit cards usually give you the late fee on one day late. And then auto loans usually give you a late fee on 5 to 10 days late. Mortgages is 15 days. And then on rent, it's usually 5 days, depending on your terms and agreement. You have to look at your contracts and verify all that. But you can incur a lot of late fees, and your late fees add up. So if you're paying $40 on a $1,000 bill and you pay that 12 times plus the interest, you have over $500 in late charges for the year. And so if you think of that, $500 on the $1,000 that you owe, that's like a 50% interest rate plus the interest rate that they're tacking on for that $1,000 that you're normally paying. So if you're catching it on time, you're avoiding all these late fees, you're helping your credit, and then it's going to look clean. Only use your credit card for items that you can pay back. Because most people are like, oh, I have $10,000 they just gave me. Let's go on a spending spree. So in the beginning, always start out with...
That was me.
You're like, woo!
Woo, free money!
Like, where can we go today? Okay, Bahamas, 10 grand. So if you're going to go pay your gas, you're going to go pay for groceries, and normally you would use your ATM and cash. You can use a credit card, but this time make sure you pay the credit card down so it goes back down to zero balance. Anything that you normally would have paid cash for, you should make that as a payment back. Don't let it ride on your credit card, because then you'll have $300 worth of groceries 4 years later will cost you like $2,500 in interest and fees and late fees and taxes and all that other fun stuff. So only pay for things that you need and necessities, and make sure you pay it back down again. And then when you build up your credit, you can use it for business expenses, which can then become a tax write-off. And then the interest on it can become a tax write-off. But that's another segment. And then consult your CPA, not financial advice.
Not financial advice. Always do your own research. Reach out to your tax professionals, everybody, your CPA.
Just consult with everybody.
Consult with everybody. Get everybody to think about it.
This is educational purposes only, for fun discussion. But being an entrepreneur my whole life, I know these little fun things. But and then helping people get their credit fixed and get their credit better so that they can buy things is always fun. So I think we talked a lot about credit now. We can talk about some things about getting ready to buy a car or buy a house and how to make your finances look good for that too.
100%. Where to start though? There's a lot of things you can do.
So the big thing, the lender is going to look at your income. So they're going to look at your income if you're buying a car. They're going to look at your income if you're buying a house. And they're going to look at your debts. And then if you're self-employed, they're going to look at your taxes, your Schedule C, or your 1120s. This is, again, not financial advice. I am licensed, but I'm not giving financial advice, just giving a broad sense so you know how to structure things. I'm not quoting rates. If you're self-employed, most self-employed individuals, this is how it works. A W-2 paycheck will get their gross salary. So say they make $10,000 a month. That's their gross salary. That's how much the total amount they make. And then they have taxes taken out. They have Social Security taken out, unemployment, disability. They have medical taken out of their paycheck, anything that they want to contribute to a 401k or an IRA. They have anything, other type of things that they want to be taken out of their paycheck. So by the time they net their paycheck after taxes for federal and California and possibly state, depending on the location that they're at, their net paycheck may only be $6,000. So they had a $10,000 gross and they have a $6,000 net, which means the amount that they take home. Now, if you're a W-2 employee and you have $6,000 that you take home, you have to pay your bills out of that money. So now you have to make your car payment and you have to make your house payment, your insurance, credit cards that we just talked about, side money, grocery money, all that stuff has to come out of that $6,000. So that's the way a W-2 person structures their information. But now a self-employed person has their $10,000 of gross income, but they write off their expenses over the gross. So if they're utilizing their car on a lease, or they're utilizing their car for their business expenses, or they're having maintenance on the car, gas, repairs, that information, it's taken out of their gross profit. So they have like a $10,000 gross. Now their car payment's $1,000 a month. That's deducted from their $10,000. And consult your CPA again. This is just for educational purposes. But you take your $10,000, you subtract your $1,000 car payment, and now you bought a laptop or you bought electronics that are used for that year. There's a depreciation expense of a $179 that you can write off for the whole entire year, as long as it's utilized for business expense and it's 100% utilized for the business expense. Again, consult. So now say you bought a laptop for $2,000. So then that's now taking off of your gross. You have a $10,000 gross. You take off your $1,000 car payment. You take off your $2,000 laptop that you purchased. And then if you have entertainment, you go out and you discuss business and you pay for everybody at the table. You can usually write off 50% of the expenses as long as it's your conducting business. And so now say your going out to dinner costs you $200. $100 of it can be deducted, but again, consult with your financial advisor. And so now you have 100, 1,000, 1,100 minus a 10. So you're paying taxes on the net amount after you have your business expense write-offs, where W-2 nets out their amount and then they pay for all of their stuff. They pay for their dinners and their cars and all the things that they do. So those are the different ways to approach something if you're a self-employed individual and you have overhead and expenses, or if you're a W-2 employee and you have personal expenses, where it comes out of on your gross amount.
See, now even this information is helpful for me.
Yes, we need those tax write-offs.
I think everybody does. Everyone's going to be looking, especially right now.
Everybody just paid taxes. Right. Yesterday they were due.
Oh, yes, yes. Yesterday they were due. But now they have ideas for what can I do next year?
Right.
So how can I manage my taxes for next year in a more efficient manner to the point where the government's going to be owing me money?
Yes. So the other thing too, so you can write off your house, your interest, insurance, they're capped at certain amounts. So you have to look at that with your tax advisor too and make sure, because the tax laws change every year. And if you have a business overhead expense, you have a Schedule C, or you have a corporate tax, which is an 1120. And so it'll give you a net on your profit or loss on that amount. If you're a W-2, it's just straight. You do your W-2 and then you have your taxes taken out, and then you do your taxes due on April 15th, which is joyful for everybody. Or you call extension until October 15th. But now the way the lenders look at it too, is that you have, if you're self-employed, they're going to look at your adjusted gross. So it'll be your net income after all of your expenses. They'll add back in your depreciation, which I just talked about, like your 179. So if you bought a laptop or you bought a computer, it's a one-time amount that's taken off for that whole year. You can't write it off again if you write off 100%. It's 100% used for business. But if you're depreciating your car, it's a depreciation expense. So on paper, it's a write-off. But if you're looking at income, it doesn't necessarily affect your income. So the lender will add depreciation back into your gross income on what you qualify for. So if you make $10,000 a month for 12 months, and now you have a gross income of $120,000, but you have business expenses, and so you depreciate your car, and your car has like a $500 depreciation for 12 months, that's a $6,000 takeoff of your gross income. You're not going to get taxed on it because it becomes a write-off. But if you go to buy a house, they'll add depreciation back in because it's a paper number. It's a paper loss. It doesn't, depreciating your car doesn't affect your actual gross income, like what goes in your pocket. It's on paper. So that's how the lender looks at it. Again, consult.
Again, consult. Everyone consult. This is just for entertainment purposes.
Right.
Elizabeth is qualified, but is not giving financial advice.
No. So it's fun. So having businesses. And then if you have a business that's your passion, so like if you have a travel business, you're able to travel and your travel becomes a write-off. Or if you have a passion about crypto and then whatever you're doing, you find a consultation with your CPA and then find out what write-offs pertain to that. Or if you're passionate about playing a musical instrument and teaching people, then consult with your CPA. You know, your instruments may become a tax write-off, and your space that you're studying in and your advertising that you're soliciting new students in. So I'm just giving examples. I don't officially play a musical instrument, but I'm just giving an example.
I feel like you'd be good at playing a musical instrument though.
Yeah. I think I played piano, but I danced my whole life. So that was enough. So it's different things. So like you find out what your passion is. So I'm traveling. That's one of my passions. And I'm on business. So I'm on business, but on my off times, I'm on pleasure, they call it, on vacation, even though I work 24/7, I think. So I never have a break. The only time I'm not working is when I'm sleeping and I'm probably dreaming of work. But I love to explore beautiful places. And so it becomes like one of my tax write-offs if it pertains to my business and I'm going to these beautiful locations for business, then it has a potential to become a tax write-off too. So
if people who want to travel, own a travel business. If you want to buy shoes, own a shoe business.
Right. We're not going to comment on that one. I'm just kidding. I wonder who that one, how that person pertains to.
No, couldn't be me.
Right. So you find your passion, you find what you love to do, and you find what you love to do in your And you also run into like kind people. You'll run into the same type of individuals that have the same mindset as you do too, if you're following your passion and pursuing that and using that as your business.
Yeah. So basically utilize and leverage your business, if you own one, to create write-off opportunities, to create gaps for tax, basically. So owning a computer when you work in crypto, buying paintbrushes and stools and everything if you're an artist, if you're a painter, if you're working a 9-to-5 and you want to come home and get a massage chair, you probably could write that off as an expense, to be honest.
I don't know about that one, but
I don't know. I might be exaggerating a little bit. Maybe
rented out the massage chair. Then yes, you could.
We're renting it out. 100%.
They like come to your house. They knock on the door. I heard you have a massage chair.
You know what? If it's in the office,
right?
And you put it in the office, and you own.
That's true. It's your furniture. It's part of your furniture. True.
Exactly. And your employees will love you, and you'll also use it as a write off. For your comfort and their comfort.
They're not working. They're just all hanging out in the massage chair all day. They have them in Japan and in the airports in Hawaii. So they have all the massage chairs for people in between flights to get rid of the stress. But yeah, those are awesome.
100%. I think in terms of write-offs, what people like miss out on and for the most part is like vehicles. And I know, Liz, you know a lot more about this than I do, but a lot of people that work at businesses and they'll get a car, or they own a business and they get a car. Do you know the exceptions exactly when someone can write off a vehicle or miles? And I know there's differentiation between them.
Yeah, so you have two different ways to write it off. If it's a lease, you usually can write off 100% of the lease plus your gas expenses. If you write off mileage, then you have to continue over and always write off mileage. You can't go back and forth between depreciation and expenses and interest or lease or miles. You have to pick one or the other. So leases usually work in the benefit for businesses. Like leases are the easiest way to write off your car expenses. And you'll have to consult with your CPA on what percentage. Some can write off 100% of their lease payment, and others can do a certain percentage based on how much they're utilizing it for the business. But if you write that off, then it's either that or miles and costs. So when your CPA is doing your taxes on the first year that you obtain a vehicle, they can look at the cost on how much it costs to obtain it, what your monthly expenses are, what your interest and what your mileage is, and then see if it's better to write off that. And then the IRS gives you a standard amount for a deduction on the mileage based off of that information. And they'll calculate that out, or you can write it off as the lease payment and then your gas. So you have to determine which one on the first year of taxes that you bring the vehicle into your company. But usually leases work in an advantage. And then leases also have that spread. So you can get a luxury vehicle because you're paying on the spread. You're paying on what the sticker price is and the window price is versus what you buy it for. So whatever it's like below MSRP. So say you buy a Tesla and the Tesla is $150K. And so your sticker price is $150K, but you got it for like $5,000 below MSRP because they were offering rebates for electric and green rewards. So now you have like the 150K and then you got it for 80, which was like four below hypothetically. So you have a $70,000 spread. They're going to go off of the residual value on that 150. So if it has a high residual value of like 70%, it would take 150 times 70%. And so you'd be like at 105, I think it is. I'm trying to do math in my head fast. And so you would pay the difference between the 80 and the 105 on your monthly lease payments. So you can buy a luxury car, have lower payments than if you were financing the car and buying it outright, and then have a better tax write-off if it's applicable for business. But we'll go into like how to buy a car on our next segment too, like how to negotiate with dealers, how to calculate out costs. I've been offered like six jobs at car dealerships because I can't make numbers. And I'm like, no, thank you.
I'll pass on that one.
I always buy my cars. I like pretty much do them online. I'll contact the lease consultant at the dealership or the online person at the dealership, and I'll negotiate everything before I even go in. And I'll tell you some secrets next week on what the car dealerships don't want you to know and like how they get you to pay more. It's called the waiting game. If you go in and test drive, then they try and get you hooked emotionally that way. But if I negotiate all my stuff over the phone, online, come up with the price, negotiate my credit too before I even pull a credit report, and then I pick the dealership that I want to use, and then I'll go in and just sign the paperwork and leave. I don't want to waste my time sitting in a dealership for 5 or 6 hours. I want to find the best price out there first, negotiate it, and then negotiate my terms, and then go in. But we'll talk about that next week on the secrets on how to do that.
The secret sauce.
Yeah, we have more hacks, life hacks.
How to become
a millionaire on life hacks. That's the goal, right? Have all the luxury, have all the things that you want, but with life hacks. That's the goal. Do all the things that you love, have the passion, go the places you want to go to, buy the cars that you want to buy, have the kind of business that you have a passion for, and do it.
Just do it and have fun with it. And use the tips and tricks that we're providing to you via all of these episodes that we've done, and just apply them, because you'll save so much money, so much time, and it'll help you significantly in the long run. It may seem small at the start, like say like for flights, saving like $100, $200 here, $300 there, building up your credit now and it's going super slow. But in the future, and you're thinking about it like, and you're like at 18, and you're pushing 20 now, your credit score is up like high 700s, and you've been flying around the world, and you save $2,000-$3,000. That's a lot,
right? It adds up
super, super quick, and that money could have been spent elsewhere. You could invest into a business, you could start up a business, you could put it into crypto.
Become millionaires on their 9-to-5 job. Most people don't become necessarily millionaires on owning a business, but they're saving money where they're able to invest in other ways to become millionaires. They're saving money to buy investment property. They're saving money on their car payment, on their taxes. They're saving money on their coffee money. They're investing in different ways to trade. They're investing on different assets. That's how people become millionaires. You don't become a millionaire on just day to day, but it stacks up and it adds up. And then by taking that money that would have been spent and not giving you a return, it gives you a future. So if you invest the money that just would have been thrown away on coffee money and you invest it in something in your future, that gives you that potential. So we're going to have to continue it on next week. Yeah. We'll talk more about credit, houses, how to buy a car, the secret sauce, life hacks. Goals on becoming a millionaire for people who want to find out how.
Everyone has the opportunity to. Everyone has the opportunity to become a millionaire, a billionaire, become Jeff Bezos. It's just how you spend your money, where you put your time, and how effective you are with that time.
Yeah, restructure your thinking. Think different. Think outside the box.
Manifest it.
Right, that too. Well, awesome. I can't wait to talk to y'all next week. I'll probably still be in Hawaii, but we'll catch up and then talk then. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, everybody.
You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.